Family is an emotional topic. It has always been to me. I spent all of my life basically away from my family. Since I entered the seminary very young, I've never been with them basically since I was like a teenager. But for the last 2 years, after becoming an orphan, losing both of my parents, I have to say that family, it's even more emotional. And it's easy to fall into sentimentality, but sentimentality then becomes sentimentalism, which is quite superficial. So I would suggest today not to stay on the surface, but to take a deeper look and ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a holy family? See, the opening prayer today, the prayer collect, said, O God, who were pleased to give us the shining example of the Holy Family, graciously grant that we may imitate them in practicing the virtues of family life. The Holy Family is a shining example. Well, if we look carefully, they are not exactly a picture-perfect family. They had a lot of hardships. Mary was pregnant before marriage. Joseph had to make a heart-wrenching decision what to do with that. Finally, they had to go to register in Bethlehem. They were so poor they could not afford to rent a room. And the child was born in a stable, talking about, you know, a clean, disinfected place. And then they had to flee for their lives, become refugees, seeking asylum, basically, in Egypt, risking being killed by Herod. I mean, they went really through a lot. But they were holy. The Holy Family is a shining example for us. So what does it mean to be holy? You might think, well, for me, my goal is to have a well-balanced, a well-adjusted, healthy family. I don't really need to strive for holiness. But you know what? I think that holiness is indeed instead what we need. Because as Léon Blois, a French writer, said once, there is only one great tragedy, one great sadness in life, not to be holy. Holiness, Mother Teresa said, is not the privilege of a few. It's the duty of all. Holiness is wholeness, being whole, being healthy, being happy. In many languages, the word holiness is actually very close to the word health. I believe that in French, holiness is santité, and health is santé, almost the same word. If you want to be healthy, you want to be whole, you need to be happy, and you need to be a saint. So how do we imitate the Holy Family? How can they be for us a shining example of holiness? And what are the virtues that we need to imitate in them? Well, we have some answers to this question in today's readings. The first, taken from the book of Sirach, it's a commentary on the fourth commandment. This is a very interesting book because it was composed by the son of Yeshua ben Sirach, who was a holy man, a prophet, and so the son wants to preserve the teachings and the example that his father gave. The writing of this book is itself a testimony to the holiness of the family. And in this book, basically the main point that is made is that the honor of father and mother will obtain God's rewards. God forgiveness, God will listen to our prayers. Honoring father and mother is a sure way of receiving graces. The second reading to the Colossians offers a list of family virtues that must prevail in every Christian family: compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, gratitude, peace of heart, and most of all, love. Do we really make these virtues our goals? Is it really what we strive for? And do we talk about this with each other in the family? Are we really clear and purposeful about, you know, let's live with gratitude, let's live with forgiveness, let's live with gentleness and humility, with kindness and compassion? And the gospel offers us a contrast between two men, Herod on one side and Joseph. Herod, mind you, was called the Great. He was a man who achieved great success. Politically, he was able to earn the trust of the Roman emperor, who placed him as a puppet king over all of Palestine. But that was not an easy thing to achieve, also because power always shifted in Rome. And if you were allied with someone, you would find yourself the enemy of someone else. But Herod was able to handle this. He was very skillful. He also amassed great wealth. He was called the Great also because he rebuilt and expanded the Temple of Jerusalem, making it truly one of the marvels of the ancient world. By all standards, he was considered great. And yet, Holy Scripture condemns him to the group of those instead who were evil, who were ultimately not important. Why? Not only because he carried out the slaughter of the holy innocents, not only because he was paranoid about this baby Jesus who was announced to be a newborn king, and he was afraid that he would try to take the kingdom from him, but most of all because Herod was all about himself. All he cared was himself. So much so that Caesar Augustus said of him, "I would rather be one of Herod's dogs than one of Herod's sons." Why? He had three of his children murdered because he was afraid they were plotting to take power from him. He killed his own sons. And he was about holding on to power, holding on to his prerogatives. All he cared about was himself. He was called the Great, while Joseph is a humble man, almost insignificant, with nothing to make him stand out. And yet, Joseph was a giant, is a giant. Why is that? Because Joseph only cared about others, only cared about God and God's plan, not his own plans, not his own dreams, but what God wanted. We are told that he heard God's revelation in dreams. Well, biblical scholars tell us that these dreams as revelation from God are metaphor. The pagans used to love dreams and consider dreams great moments of divine manifestation. Even in the Old Testament, we find a lot of people dreaming and receiving revelation from God. However, we should understand this, as I say, as a metaphor. Dreams are the moments when you are praying when you are open to be inspired by God, to go beyond what you understand, what you want, and allow God's dreams, God's plans, God's purposes to become your own. That's what Joseph does. He allows God's dreams, God's plans to become his own. He listens. By the way, he never speaks a word. There's not one word spoken by Joseph in the whole of the gospel. Maybe that's the secret of greatness. I don't know. And he obeys. Now, I made a vow of obedience together with a vow of chastity and poverty. At first, when I was young, honestly, I thought that the most difficult vow would be chastity. Then maybe poverty. Now I find that the vow of obedience is the most difficult for me. I don't like obedience. I don't like people telling me what to do. I'll be honest. And I think that it's a common attitude right now in many of us. We want to be in charge of our own life. But Joseph is the obedient man. The Lord tells him, he has an inspiration, and he does it without hesitation, without second thoughts. He listens and he obeys. That's the greatness of Saint Joseph. He listens in prayer, in meditation. He's open to God, he's available, and he does what the Lord reveals to him. To me, that's the secret of the holiness of the Holy Family. Mary does the same, by the way. She's the one that listens at the Annunciation and says, "Fiat, let it be done to me according to your word. I'm willing to obey to God's plan, not my own plans." Now, in our times, we often hear, you know, people inviting us to make the best of our lives. Your life is yours. Do with it what you want. Don't be a follower. Follow your own paths. I believe that this is deceiving. I believe that greatness is not living our life, my life, as if it were all about me. Instead, greatness is understanding that I'm here for a purpose, and I need to discover that purpose and live by it. There's a word in psychology that defines this attitude, and it's pro-existence. Living your life for someone else, not simply coexistence. Sometimes we limit our family life to coexistence. It's not enough. We need to look for pro-existence, living for others, for God, and for those who God has given to me. To me, that's holiness. That's greatness. That's the greatness of Joseph and Mary. Let me close with a little story, a parable. It's a German legend titled The Women of Weinsberg. It says that when King Conrad III defeated the Duke of Welf in the year 1140 and placed the city of Weinsberg under siege, the wives of the besieged castle negotiated a surrender, which granted them the right to leave with their children and with whatever they could carry on their shoulders. The king allowed them that much. Leaving everything else aside, each woman led by the hand her children and carried her husband on her shoulders. When the king's people saw that, many said that this was not what had been agreed upon. But the king laughed and accepted the women's clever trick. A king, he said, should always stand by his word. They led their children, carried their husbands. Are we carrying each other? Not just wives carrying their husband, but are we willing to do that service to other in our family? Are we willing to to accept the challenge of pro-existence, not simply coexistence, but living at the service of God and the service of others. My life is not about me. My life is about God's purposes. That's holiness. And once again, there is no greater tragedy, no greater sadness in life than not to be holy. So may the Lord grant us this gift of holiness as we begin a new year. And may we set goals for our families to live by the shining example of the Holy Family and embrace the family virtues that they have shown us. Imitate them in a virtuous and holy life.